This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello everybody, a happy new year to you all and a big welcome along to this week's Sky Blues Extra podcast brought to you by the Sky Blue Tavern with myself, Dean Atkinson and Ross Cooper with me this week. Ross, happy new year to you, mate. Here we go again.
Happy new year to you. Here we go again. 2024, crazy.
How are you feeling heading into this year? It's starting to now feel like potentially it could be a big one.
Yeah, I think 2024 is going to surpass 2023.
It's going to change the history of the football club.
Yeah, I think it will. And regardless of what, you know, happens this season, obviously 2024 will see the sort of first half of next season. And I feel like there's exciting things on the horizon, and the club just feels like it's going in the right direction. Every little thing that you want to happen, it is sort of starting to happen, you know, with the news coming out today about the statues for John Sillett and George Curtis, which is something that ever since obviously they sadly passed away, as fans, you're thinking, you go around to all these other stadiums and you see icons everywhere on all corners of the stadium land. And it's great to hear that news. And I think that's just another step in the direction of where we're going as a club. So yeah, that's exciting.
I was going to start with that breaking news of the statue. It's a great way to really cement two really important figures, cement their legacy with the club, just like the way that the Jimmy Hill statue has.
Yeah, 100%. And having it south stand, so I get my...
Yeah, I was going to say, where do you think you'll see it?
I think that's going to be near the Superstore, I think.
Yeah,
I think the players' entrance, which I think is, again, with the traffic and the footfall that you get there now on a match day, is fantastic. So, you know, the statue will be seen by thousands every match day. And again, you'll be able to see it, I guess, on the A444 as well. So, no, I think it's fantastic. It's a great gesture. Initially, when I saw the link and saw the statue, I thought, Mark Robbins.
Already.
fantastic news. And again, I think that it really sort of set the day off on a good note today.
I think the Robbins one will be by the wall, right?
Yes.
Wall of remembrance, eventually.
And along the Wall of Fame sort of thing. Eventually. Once he's won us the Champions League, then I think it'd just about end it, I think.
And then where do our ones go? That's what I need to ask as well.
Down by Dylan's Brewery, I think. in the queue, having a beer.
Yeah, constantly in that queue. The queue never seems to go down in that place. It's it's hilarious. We do need to talk about, obviously, there's a fundraising thing in process as well for this statue. £87,000 is the target. £135,000 has already been raised by donors so far. Doesn't actually say anything much about the club putting any money towards it at this moment in time. it's quite vague, isn't it, in regards to that. And £87,000 seems a lot of money to raise between fans. It would surprise me. And here's a free lesson in PR. Obviously, I can already see the boo boys already out in force on Twitter asking where's Doug King putting his money towards this. But here's a lesson in PR for you folks. That £87,000 will not be met by fans. And then the club will miraculously top it up to the £87,000 target. Hence, the good PR that will come from that for Doug King and the club as well. So that's how these things work, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah, don't be too disabundant in regards to the club not putting any money towards it. They will eventually, or they might already have. We just don't know at this
stage. Exactly. They might, it just made me laugh. You know, it's like, would we rather just carry on today? Could they, you know, never have a statue sort of thing. And then the fans be moaning about that. And then it's great. You know, it's news that everyone should just, yeah, should be pleased about. And yeah, it's one of those that you don't know who these donors already are. And I think people always want to find something to moan at.
It's the same crew though, every single time, Ross.
Well, I know
the conspiracy theorists, the ones with a grudge. It's really weird, odd.
Yeah. And we'll get on to obviously Middlesbrough and stuff, but like Doug King was on TalkSport on yesterday, on Wednesday, you know, with Jim White and Simon Jordan. It was a year since he sort of, you know, officially became owner and approved. And he was obviously asked about how he's seen it going. And you listen to him and he wasn't asked too many questions in terms of January transfer business, but he was asked about how he felt like the whole year's been. And he sounds incredibly joint energized. Maybe it's because he was in the French Alps having his birthday bash there. But
did you not get an invite?
I didn't get it.
Or are you actually doing this podcast live from a little break in the slopes?
Yeah, Doug, another flat white for me, please. but no, and he sounded really positive, actually. And he sounded very sort of excited. And he said he's enjoying it. And I think that's the key thing. You know, when you listen to too much Simon Jordan, it feels like the football manager, football ownership is just this doom and gloom sort of place. But, you know, again, nothing groundbreaking. But again, that positive energy that I think people are starting to see, actually, things that were said, not from him, not just him, but Robbins and everybody, is starting to come to fruition.
Apart from the same old crew who seems to just have a pop at every single thing that's done. Well, club wise, it's weird.
They would moan. Even we could get promoted, and they'd still be finding something to moan about. You know,
yeah. Peculiar. Shall we? Yeah, we'll end on that bit. So coming up on this week's show, we'll of course look back at the Swansea and Middlesbrough games. We'll look ahead to that Oxford FA Cup tie on Saturday, and I want to take a look into some of the very early rumours that are circulating around various transfers and the different outlets reporting so far over the first 4 days. So lots to get through. We'll crack on. Christmas as a whole, Ross. I'm going to go from the Birmingham game. 7 games, 4 wins, 3 draws, 15 points available from the available 21. The third best in the division in regards to points gained. 14 goals scored, 5 goals against. I think it's fair to say it's better than what we could have imagined.
Oh, 100%. I think even at the start of the season, when we were probably feeling pretty optimistic, I think everyone looked at December and thought, that's going to be a tough
month. My God, we better be in a good position heading
into
that. Yes, exactly.
And we weren't.
Yeah, we weren't
in a good position at all. So I think there was some real panic. Couldn't have asked for much more. Couldn't have asked for any more, to be honest. It was it's been a brilliant turnaround, brilliant set of results, but also consistent sort of performances in those. You know, there's a real identity to how we're playing now. There's an identity to the team. We look like a team. A brilliant Christmas period. I mean, and even that one defeat early on in December against Ipswich, that would have been avoidable, you know, as we spoke about at the time, with key moments in matches, penalties going in, you know, easily could have got a draw there, and then we'd be sat here unbeaten for God knows how long. So, yeah, real positive and delighted.
It's just one defeat in 11 as well, which is, you know, really, really good form coming back from that international break where it pretty much was doom and gloom.
Well, I think the last 10 games I saw that we picked up the third most point, only Leicester and Southampton have picked up more. And
it was doom and gloom. On a collision course for the Premier League, aren't they? Like, it's just...
Exactly, and you look at it, and then I saw a stat about 2023. you know what I mean? And we're right up there again, you know. So it's beginning to roll, and we've still got levels to go up. And I see that in players, and I think that's exciting. And yeah, it's there's people on Twitter, you know, we're bang in trouble.
I like one that I'm up after each week.
Yeah, it's funny. Brilliant, isn't it? It's exciting.
Absolutely. Last game at the CBS for 2023 was against Swansea. Five changes to the side. I thought we always thought there would be some squad rotation in this game. De Silva, Binks, Sheaf, Allen and Palmer returning to the starting 11. I think the big surprise was probably, though, Matty Godden still remaining at the top end of the pitch, Ross. I think we all sort of agreed that after his performance on Boxing Day, it probably wasn't merited if he started the game, but he did. What was your thoughts on his performance versus Swansea?
I think you could clip up what I said, I think, after the Sheffield Wednesday game and sort of just copy and paste it. I think it was very, very similar. I was surprised. Ineffective and just not involved. I guess that's the thing that I touched on at Sheffield Wednesday and again in the Swansea game. I felt like he just wasn't impacting the game. And I know it's not me where I'm thinking, oh, I only see when he scores, whatever. And I am watching his runs and I am trying to see his movement. And obviously we're playing a lot more sort of fluid, you know, and obviously went behind. Obviously we'll talk about that. But when we're attacking, I don't know, it just felt he wasn't in the places that I expect Matty Godden to be. There were some great balls from Hadji Wright across the 6-yard box. I'm thinking, well, if he's there, then knocking that in, then you sort of go, that's the poacher. That, do you know what I mean? That's that he, there he is finishing off those moves, but he wasn't. And I just sort of again felt like he looked slightly
behind the pace of the game. I thought everything seemed to be a little bit too quick for him, really.
Well, I think that it stands out, actually. I think with Sakamoto, with O'Hare, with Hadji Wright, he then stands out as clearly being obviously the slowest, you know, and he sort of visibly looks the slowest. You know, he's an honest player. He works extremely hard.
I'll never begrudge his commitment.
I love him for that.
And for the club, but it's just like, he just seems to be, and this is an age thing. Of course it is. It's just like, he's just slowing down. You just can't keep up with the pace of what we're playing at. That's how I feel things are.
Well, yes. Yeah, exactly. So it was, that was a surprise to see him start again. I mean, when was his last goal? I want to say it was Millwall, that rebound from Hadji Wright, I think. So he hasn't scored in several games. Sakamoto has now gone level with him in terms of on 6 goals, league goals. Hadji Wright's obviously gone clear as top goal scorer, which is obviously, I think, what we all want to see.
It's one goal in 16 matches. It was that one goal against Millwall.
So he's not in form. He's... You know, I sort of had these discussions at the start of the season when he was scoring all those goals, feeling like actually, in a way, it was sort of having a negative effect on, like, the team. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, we're now playing and it's well, he's sort of, like, struggling for form. So I don't know what the answer is, because he's not going to suddenly get this extra yard of pace, is he? You know?
See, I was critical of this contract, the new contract, 2+1. With the one being in his favour. It takes him to 35 years old, eventually, at the end of his contract. It didn't seem like good business to be at the time. Maybe a year extension.
So fine. Say that again. So his contract's till when?
So it'll be till he's 35.
So what, till 2025? With an option to 2026?
Yes.
And the option's in his favour, you said?
Yes.
Right. Well, what does that mean then?
So he can just sign a one-year extension whenever he likes.
Oh, I see. Okay, so he'll do that then.
Yeah, of course. Of course he'll do that.
Well, look, listen, I don't have a problem with that. And I'm sure, you know, and obviously when I spoke to Matty Godden at the, you know, the Meet the Players event with him and Ellis Sims, you know, his passion for the club, like you said, cannot be questioned. He loves the club and I think you'd obviously want to stay. But I think, obviously, we spoke about it, me, you and Dave Moore, about the sort of changing of the guard in terms of, you know, the three obvious ones are God and Kelly and Fads. Fads and Kelly aren't, you know, one's an unused sub, one's not even making it in the squad, you know, and then Godden is still playing. But I think him is like third choice, do you know what I mean, in that role, or coming on like he did against Middlesbrough, bringing him on when you need a fox in the box to try and get a goal, I think is a suitable role for him. It comes down to what he wants, I think, in terms of, you know, I mean, Robbins isn't blind. I think earlier on in the season, we said this, and I was sort of flabbergasted that he never got taken off. I think the first game he got taken off was about 10 games into the season. And it was like, wow, this guy's playing every minute of every game. But now Robbins is even, well, he's not starting him. He'll haul him off sort of thing. And yeah, I want to see Matty Godden in form. And the thing is, I know there'll be another little purple patch at some point in this season. It could be a crucial one. You know, at the end of last year when he scored a couple of important goals against Reading, and because you know he can finish. But I do feel with this system, that bit of pace is just holding him back, I think.
Yeah, 26 is the option. So he's contract wise in 25. So another year basically after this summer, which you kind of feel it's probably the ideal time to maybe move him on at that point. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. But like you said, I think against Middlesbrough, when he came onto the pitch, he looked much more lively. Like he got up to speed with the pace of the game quicker.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like when you're watching the game, maybe you can, you know, react to it quicker than when you're actually in the game. Does that make sense?
He's also coming on knowing, I don't know how long he came on for, but like that thing of we're winning 3-1.
You've got 20 minutes. Use all your
energy.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether sometimes when he's starting, you know, he could be playing the full 90 minutes. He could be playing 80. Does that sort of, not pacing himself a bit, but like he's obviously on for a much longer period. He actually looked like potentially nicking a goal against Middlesbrough, that rebound. And there's a couple of moments where I thought, I could get a goal here. So I think that's his role. I think he can come on, press defenders for 20 minutes and just, you know, leave them nonstop. Don't, you know, give them any moments rest. I think that's his role, I think.
Yeah.
And there'll be the odd game where he can start. I'm sure he'll probably start on Saturday.
Yeah,
we'll have to talk about that. Yeah. But yeah, he needs a goal. He needs a goal, I think.
And someone who did get a goal was Liam Walsh early in this game. Again, like, we are the makers of our own downfall, aren't we? Again, like, clearing the lines. I said it against Middlesbrough in the group chat. Like, we have a real issue with just clearing the ball. Most of the goals we seem to concede always seem to come from us failing to clear our lines. And it was exactly the same here.
Yeah. Well, it was poor, wasn't it? I mean, we had a couple of opportunities to clear it. And then Jamie Allen just, I don't know what, dillying-dallying. And then obviously they just slotted it in. And you just, obviously it was at the other end to where I sit. But it was just, it was infuriating because I thought that is the most... That reminded me of one of the goals we conceded, like, in the last couple of seasons. That's a trademark Coventry City goal, like, no pressure. And that really disappointed me with Allen, because it was like he wasn't up to the speed of the game, and he just wasn't. It was almost like a training exercise. Like, oh, he's done a heavy touch. That's right, we'll go again. But it's like, no, this is a match, mate. I mean, we're 1-0 down already, you know, because of a mistake which you can't afford to make at this level.
I think that really played into the atmosphere of the game. I thought it was so flat in the CBS. Like, there was no excitement. I didn't feel like the drummer played a lot. Like, there was not much singing. Just felt really...
It didn't help. I know. It certainly didn't help. I think Swansea at home is a weird one. We don't have a very good record against them at all. So then to go behind, and it just felt like a sort of deja vu I was getting from previous games when we played Swansea. But obviously, I guess the positive... And my fear was that it was going to stay 1-0 for... God knows how long.
And really struggled to get back into the game. Yeah. But the instant reply was obviously the key factor. Palmer in the thick of things again. I think
another assist. Yeah.
He's so good. Like, I don't really know how to explain. He feels like a luxury player, but he does just the ludicrous stuff at times. You feel like you should be so far ahead of this level. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but some of his strength, his dribbling, and you can see his mind is mentally, he's on it. Like, he's incredible.
He's
so
a
focused.
Step ahead of everybody. Yeah. Like, he knows what's going to happen in that next phase of play.
But I also, I guess, last season, for example, I feel like, yeah, he was a step ahead of everyone, obviously, before he got injured. But I feel like there's players around him now who actually, like Sakamoto, is equal, O'Hare, equal. Do you know what I mean?
Bringing out the best.
So because he's making these passes, and then there's other players we've got who, yeah, tactically and technically that are on that level. Whereas I feel like in previous seasons, he's had people where he's doing stuff. People haven't made these runs because they're not believed that he can do it, or they've not seen the opportunity. So brilliant little ball from him. Just a little perfectly weighted, lovely nick round the corner for obviously Hadji Wright to run onto.
Hadji's game makes me laugh. Like it's like borderline ridiculous, because 1 minute he does something outrageous, like this goal. He sort of stops and then decides to run with the ball, and then brilliant finish. And then the next minute he's up the other end and he can't control the ball. Like it's just like he's such an enigma.
But that's a real shift actually around where I sit. People, I think, have started seeing that actually, regardless of this sort of weird, like, he's clearly going to have to do something stupid in the game. He impacts the game. Every game, without a shadow of a doubt, he will have one or two clear chances at least. He will then make one or two clear chances at least. He's impacting the game. And we spoke about Godden at the top of the pod and the lack of impact, when that's where people go, he's just sort of missing. Hadji Wright's not never missing. He's always there. And yes, he does some stuff where that goal, again, I thought if Vic does that goal, people would be absolutely raving. Yeah. I mean, the way he sort of shapes on his right, and obviously I was right behind it, and I thought, wow, that looks like an £8 million player there. Like the confidence, the celebration, everything. And then you go to the second half where all he's got to do is head it back across goal. And it's just like skimmed off his head, 50p head, and gone out. And I'm thinking, no. But look, he's looking more bullish with the ball out left. Like, I mean, it was a great, obviously the goal itself, fantastic strike. And then I think it was shortly after that as well, when he's believing in himself to stand up defenders now, isn't he? Go down the line, whip that ball across. And as I touched on earlier, no one was in the box. And it was a great ball. It was too far for the keeper to get. And it was on the edge of the 6-yard box. I do like Hadji Wright. And as I was sort of saying, I think people around me, the ones who were slagging him off for literally, even Josh Eccles would do a poor corner and somehow it was Hadji Wright's fault. Now, people are seeing that he's contributing. So actually, they'll give me like a little look, because they know that I've always backed him. But they're not slating him now, even when he does something bad, because they know that actually, yes, he's got this option to have this brain fart moment, but he's also got this moment, he's got the ability to do something that wins us a match.
Oh yeah, my dad's one of those, and I wind him up big time. Like when he scored the goal, I was like, that's what he's about. Look at him, super, super quality. And then obviously that header, my dad just turned to me and just gave me a stare.
Yeah, that's exactly what the guy did in front of me. And I said, look, I never said he's perfect, man.
He wouldn't be in the championship if he was. You know what I mean? No. It's just it's part and parcel. We're going to get some good and we're going to get some bad.
I laugh. I think, imagine how would our fans have reacted if we'd spent the same amount of money on that Sunderland striker who Southampton bought. His name just escaped me. Yeah, who's then been injured the entire time. I mean, what on earth would our fans be saying about that? But no, he's very, very... he does make me laugh, Hadji Wright. But I think the key indicator would be, just sort of slight jump in the head, if he was to sort of be injured right for a period of time, I think a lot of these people who sort of slag him off would be like, oh no, that's a blow. I think their gut reaction would be like, oh no.
Because he's not replaceable on the left though as well, because we haven't got anybody to fill in that role. You'd probably be looking at De Silva playing in there.
De Silva or could he put Palmer there like when he brought him on against Middlesbrough?
Yeah,
it'd be interesting.
But are you going to get the work rate from Palmer coming back? You know, like, I mean, Hadji's work rate is off the scale. Like,
well, it's improved, isn't it? Yeah, massive.
He pops up on the edge of his own box more often than not defending. Yep. It's good to see. Like, his work rate is terrific and very underappreciated, I feel. I want to talk about Matt Grimes as well. Like, I thought the only time that sort of Swansea threatened is when he was in control of the ball. Like, everything they attempted seemed to come through him. He feels like the perfect fit to go alongside Chief, doesn't he?
He's attempting away.
It's so annoying that he plays for Swansea.
I guess my only sort of pushback on that would be, does he not do what Chief does? And do we not need someone who's a little bit more sort of forward thing? Like,
no, I think he's totally different to Chief.
He's very sideways, though. I did feel like and that's what Chief can happily do that.
No, but he was finding passes through gaps and stuff.
I agree. If we signed him today, I'd be buzzing. I'd be thinking, yeah, that's a
statement of intent.
Yeah, I agree. But I sort of feel like, I don't know, I was sort of, again, watching, you know, on New Year's Day as well, and thinking, it's mad. Like, if you just literally put Hamer there, do you know what I mean? That mold, someone who can, because I feel like you spoke about this and you said this in the group chat. I feel like she's having to try and do several roles. And he's trying to do more than what maybe he needs to do, because obviously in the absence of that sort of central midfielder, I feel like we'll see the best of Sheaf, even though his numbers actually are very, very good this year. I think we'll see even more from him if he can then just simplify his game and focus on one aspect that he needs to do. So, yeah, you know, Grimes did look very good. I mean, they've got a couple of decent players, Swansea. But Cullen, obviously, struck his free kick quite well.
They had that young lad out on the right-hand side, yeah, which they seem to aim for De Silva every single time. I think that's a real negative on De Silva's game, is defending when the ball goes over the back of him.
Yeah, he was poor in that game.
It sticks out to me quite a bit. Every sort of game we've had where De Silva's played left back, they've attempted to go over the top of him, obviously because of his height. But he sort of really struggles to sort of find the best position to defend against that, because it's easily defendable.
Well, like you said, they kept doing it, didn't they? From left back, just pinging those crossfield balls, and he looked at a little, it was a poor performance from him, actually. I was a bit disappointed. I actually put a bit of blame on that to Binks as well. I've not been his biggest fan, Binks, and I didn't think he was very good at all. And I don't think he was
too close to Thomas the whole game. There was a big gap between them. Binks and De Silva. Because he was too close to Thomas. Yeah.
And again, you sort of don't realise what you've got until it's missing. I just thought, you know, we spoke about Kitchen.
It's a bit like this podcast where we're not on.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, you know, look, obviously, I expected Binks to be a bit rusty, and I actually was a little anxious about the game, as I said on the preview pod, only because the defense had looked impenetrable, and then obviously we give away that sloppy goal. That wasn't Binks's fault, but again, suddenly it seems to coincide with slightly different back four. But obviously, we responded, and all in all, I thought he did okay in that game.
I thought one plus point for Binks, I thought he brought the ball out a lot more than we ever saw
him in the back five. Yes.
Yeah. And he did some really nice passing out wide to Hadji at times, a couple of penetrative passes as well. So that was good to see. And he actually did that again against Middlesbrough. But I think defensively, you're right.
He's not a defender. I don't think he's that good a defender. I really don't. I don't think he reads the, against Middlesbrough again, there, for, you know, I know we'll talk about it, but like there was balls going in between him and Bidwell. And I thought that's not happening when Kitchen's there. And I guess the biggest compliment I could pay Thomas is that I thought Thomas looked as good, you know, without Kitchen there. And I was a bit worried that he might downgrade his performance, but actually I thought he was very, very good. And he stood up, and yeah, it's clear who the two centre backs are, you know.
I think Biggs looked better in the five at the back. Mm-hmm. Then the four. That's where, you know, obviously that's where he played during that period. We played with a back five. Yes. He looked solid in that period. So maybe that's more of his game rather than the four. Obviously Ellis Sims made it 2-1 where he stole the goal. What was your thoughts on that, actually? Because I looked at obviously Twitter and the like. You can't seem to win, can you? Because if Sims doesn't smash that in, then people would moan if a defender got back and cleared off the line, or if it went wide.
Yeah, people would be apoplectic. But then obviously, if he taps it in and then beep, the flag goes up, people would be apoplectic.
You stole Hadji's goal.
Well, I mean, to be that, look, that that's, well, for any, you know, reasonable fan, that didn't cross my mind. It was only that I thought, oh God, if the flag goes up now, because he's offside. Because it's obviously, when you watch it back, it's clearly going like half a yard inside the post, but that was brilliant from Hadji. Great ball from Sakamoto, and again, that was another moment where I'll go, there's a real play there, and Hadji like cushioned it down, it's going in, and
perfect header, as well.
I was disappointed, to be fair, because I then said to the guy who sits in front of me, I said, listen, if he gets a hat trick today, mate, you're going to get Hadji's face tattooed on your ass. And he agreed to it, and then I checked the thing and saw it had gone down as Sims's goal, so I was disappointed about that, but no. Sims needed that, but it was just a shame because it was announced as Hadji's goal. So he didn't get that goal scoring moment at the CBS, which is, I think, what we've all said he needed. But no, up to three goals for him. And it was, important.
And then we went full Coventry City in the 93rd minute, not being clinical with the chances. We mentioned that the Hadji chance in that second half. I think there was a couple. I think O'Hare
forced a good save
as well. But again, panic mode set in, didn't it? It's so frustrating giving away that free kick and, you know, the real sucker punch for the equaliser.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird. Like, we were sort of panicky, but I didn't feel like they were going to score.
I didn't feel threatened.
Remember the Huddersfield game when we did concede late, but we went all panicky, and Robbins even said it was like we were all over the shop. I didn't feel like we were necessarily completely all over the shop. I didn't feel like they were going to score from open play. You know, there's certain games where you get a real bad vibe, and I thought this is ominous. I didn't feel that. But again, as soon as Sheaf gave that free kick away, I thought, I don't know, it just didn't look right from where I sat. Did not look right. And I thought, they're going to score here. And lo and behold, they did. So it was, that was obviously deflating to concede, basically the last kick of the game.
I think it was like three players got dragged towards the ball, didn't they, for the free kick. And then if you leave a trailing leg in there.
Oh, he falls over. The ref will always give the free kick.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. No doubt.
And then the wall, obviously a lot of chat about the wall situation. I think for me, the wall is fine. Like, it covered the left side. I think the blame for me goes on Collins because it's on his side.
Yeah, that's as simple as I'd go with it, to be fair. I feel like, I mean, he does hit it well and he does hit it in the corner. I don't look at it and go, oh, he has to be saving that. But I feel like he'd back himself that side of, if it goes over the wall into the top corner, we go, damn, great free kick. Or it's the wall's fault if they don't do something right. I mean, the only other thing was there was those bunch of players, O'Hare and a couple of Swansea players, where the ball went through that gap between the wall and then that other cluster of players. And I know you watch it back, slow-mo's easy, and you think, if it just hit someone there and bounced out, then, we'd have won the game. But it was one of those. I think there's a lot of positives to take from the performance, all in all. They didn't tear us open at the end. It was just a sucker punch free kick.
Man of the match, then, to wrap this one up?
I'd go Hadji Wright.
I think it's close between him and Sheaf.
Yeah, I thought Sheaf was good. I thought the goal, I thought the balls he put in, the obviously assist, but the header for Sims, I thought he contributed a lot. And I think we need him to be our match winner and do those moments. And I think he did, did enough of those. And Sheaf, good mention to him as well.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, let's move on to the game on New Year's Day versus Middlesbrough. Long trip to the Riverside. Fantastic following for the Sky Blues as well, going up there after what would be a very expensive Christmas period as well, let's not forget. Mark Robbins reverted back to what we found to be the strongest 11, obviously minus Kitching serving the second game of his three-match suspension. And it felt like the right thing to do, Ross, going back to what we knew, what we know, and going against a very much depleted Borough side.
Yeah, I mean, their bench was all youngsters. They had decent enough start in 11, but there was nothing on the bench. And obviously, Van Avac coming back in, Bidwell coming back in. Obviously, we didn't really speak about Van Avac in the Swansea game, but obviously him, he adds just so much, doesn't he? So obviously, and it filled me with confidence. Obviously, like you said, no Kitching, but everything else was pretty sort of you know, self-explanatory, and obviously Sims getting the other opportunity to lead the line, which was pretty evident, I think, once he obviously didn't start against Swansea. So, yeah, I was pretty happy with the lineup. And for the first 5 minutes, I thought we started okay. Really well.
Yeah, yeah,
we looked, I thought, oh yeah, looking confident, as we should be, you know, every right to be confident. And then it all changed on one ball. That one pass where just, again, I don't think that gets to where it needs to get to when if Kitchen's playing. I just feel like everything seemed to be down Binks's, you know, side. And then Collins comes out and I was thinking, oh no, you know, and they take it around him and I thought goal, and it was unbelievable clearance.
Yeah. It felt like, yeah, the tide had definitely changed with that chance. Yeah. And we were up against that first half big time. I mean, Collins made a string of really, really good saves. There was a period where then they had four or five chances in like 10 minutes.
We couldn't get out, could we?
We just have to get control of this ball somehow. But I mean, clearing the lines, Ross. Every single time. It's just that ability to say sometimes you've just got to boot the ball up the pitch, get the second ball, win the second ball.
Relieve the pressure a bit, yeah.
Yeah, I listened to the Peter Crouch podcast with Neil Warnock yesterday. And he was saying the same thing. Sometimes it's okay doing all this tippy-tappy stuff here and there, but sometimes you just got to get the ball up the pitch and fight for that second ball. And that's something we need to bring into our game. It's frustrating me a lot that we seem to always feel like the only way out is to tippy-tappy around. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it isn't.
Maybe that's the next step of, you know, the, like, I know the Sims role or whatever.
It's decision making. Right, yeah.
I guess the other thing is, though, I almost felt like early on in the season, we were way the other way in terms of, because we almost felt like we still had Vic. Any opportunity it was, we would avoid the short pass and just like play this long ball in the channel, you know, for the sort of sake of it. So I think we've probably gone too far, maybe too often trying to play out, but you know, it's getting results. And I mean, they had 12 corners in the game. I'd love to know how many of those were in the first half. It felt like probably the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
There was a period. I mean, Collins, that was his best game. It was shot stopping wise. Some excellent saves.
What's your thoughts on him overall?
Collins. I think, look, I can't argue with obviously the form of the team and obviously the clean sheets in this period, this run since he's come in. I was impressed with him actually against Middlesbrough because I had some thoughts of he's clearly obviously oozes confidence on the ball. His distribution is obviously a step up from Wilson. There's always going to be kicks that go out of play. That's just the nature of the beast. You see it every goal he does it. But the one question mark had been how good is he a shot stopper? Because I will back Ben Wilson. I think Ben is a really good shot stopper. So actually this game made me go, actually, yeah, he can make some match-winning saves ultimately because it kept us in the game. What are your thoughts?
I'm not convinced.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not convinced we have a good goalkeeper. I'm convinced we've got two adequate goalkeepers. I don't think we have a really good goalkeeper. And that's one thing I would look at rectifying in the summer, especially if someone like Rotherham go down and we can grab their keeper on the cheap, then you know, I'd be very happy about that. I think Collins, for me, he seems to struggle to catch it under pressure. He seems to parry stuff a lot.
Yeah.
He's got this thing of sort of patting the ball down before gathering. So sort of shot comes in, he pats the ball down before catching it when it's an easy catch. Or if the ball is played along the floor, he seems to sort of push it slightly out to the side and then grab it. I don't think that's a sign of a good goalkeeper for me. I'm just not confident in that ability to sort of catch the ball, which...
But then having said that...
Which is what we had with Lee Birch, to be fair.
That's why
we called him Dracula.
But the other thing that Collins, in his defence, there was corner kicks, mate, where I'm not joking, with Wilson or whatever in goal, any corner, even as close in the 6-yard box it would come, it would never be caught. He did catch some from the corners, which does...
I'm not saying he doesn't do it when he... He doesn't do it all the time. He doesn't do enough for me. That's probably the best way of putting it. I'm not convinced he's got
he's commanding enough, do you?
Yeah, I just feel like there's a little bit lacking there. And maybe it will come in time, more confidence in with the team and stuff. And I can't knock, obviously, what he's done. He kept this in games.
Who do you think, who would you prefer to be in goal?
I think with the way we play with four now, I would rather see Collins because I think his distribution is key.
Yeah.
But with a five, I think Wilson is perfectly fine to play in a five. Because when you play a four, you need the keeper. The way we play, you need the keeper to be confident on the ball and be able to put a pass out. And I think Collins has got that. Collins is better than that at that than Wilson is. Yeah. Whereas if you play with a five, you've got the extra man back there automatically to be the anchor for the pass, the spare man, whereas Collins needs to be that in the four. So horses for courses for me in that regard.
Yeah.
Right, let's talk about we mentioned their goal already with Coburn obviously drifting in the middle of the defence to turn it in. And we reacted quickly again, Ross. 4 minutes later, level, through Sakamoto. A very good corner. I'm going to give him his due here, Josh Eccles. Very yes. good corner. Incredible save. Was it a save or did it hit the bar? I don't know, from Thomas.
It's difficult. I think, it's difficult to know, really. I spent a lot of spare time watching all these Middlesbrough vlogs. it's still hard to tell. But no, yeah, very good corner. Great header from Thomas. And whether it hit the bar or was saved.
The finish is great, isn't it?
Oh, the finish is so composed. Like to hit it, you know, when the ball's coming out like that with all the bodies in front of him, it'd be easy to sort of snatch it and just send it over the bar or scuff it wide. But to find the corner, fantastic. And, you know, that... It felt like a bit like when we equalised against Cardiff when we hadn't really deserved, you know, and things had looked a bit ominous. And suddenly find ourselves 1-1. It was like, right, we won the jackpot here.
And settled us down a lot, didn't it?
It did. And we had another big chance, didn't we, shortly after Taji Wright did everything right. And then until the finish was wrong.
I just remember that now. This is what we're talking about. You're going to get some good, you're going to get some bad. It's so frustrating.
But like, I think was it Sakamoto again? Or whoever played the ball
pass,
over to him.
Sakamoto, yeah.
Pass over to him. And he does it unbelievably well, Hadji. Like, he brings it down on his chest, comes inside, and you're thinking, if he finds the back of the net here,
that's one of the goals of the year.
And he just, he just sends it just into space. But again, so we finished the first half with that little flurry. But yeah, we were fortunate to be in at 1-1. I say fortunate. Brad Collins made really great saves, to be fair to him. So
that's why we're our keeper, Russ. That's why you allowed someone to use their hands in the middle of the net.
Exactly. But that one in particular from Engel, where he like sort of chipped, you know your golf, mate. And it was just like little dink, mate. And it looked like it was like going in. And he just, came across and tipped it over, which was, brilliant save. So yeah, all in all, I was buzzing at 1-1 because I knew we were going to play better in the second half.
And you knew they were going to tire. I mean, this has been pretty much the same 12 or 13 players they've used in, you know, 8 or 9 games. Big Christmas period as well. Nothing on the bench really to affect the game at any sort of top end level. You knew they were going to tire at some point. And in the second half, we played on that. You know, we asserted our dominance, a tactical change as well. I don't know if you noticed, but the fullbacks were 10 yards further up the pitch than they were in that first half. We used the channels a lot more, tried to pin them in those areas on the side of the pitch where they didn't want to be. You know, they couldn't really defend those sides of the pitches. And that's where we found fortune in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, just when the fullbacks are up like that, it's very difficult for them to get out because, you know, Bidwell overlapping Hadji or whether it's Milan overlapping Tatsu. Either when the ball comes out, then Sheaf and Eccles, they can then just do their job perfectly. They just mop it up. Or if it goes beyond them, Binks, then suddenly Binks had a much better second half because he was in the right place. He was in the positions that I would become accustomed to seeing Kitching in. Thomas was brilliant again. And we were able to sustain attacks. And that's allowing us to just
build pressure. Teams
out, build pressure. And it felt like it was coming, you know. And obviously we had that huge chance for Sims, didn't we?
I thought he had a really good second half. I thought he was absolutely key in like how the game changed. Like he really forced their centre halves to run, pin them into corners. I mean, he was unlucky to not get on the score sheet for the second. Obviously, Hadji stole it from him. a role reversal. But a great save as well from the initial shot.
Great save from that. He had obviously, yeah, he struck that well. And obviously before that, like I say, he had that chance where Hadji headed it back into his path
bar.
And he should score that over the bar or hit the target at least. So yeah, he was involved. And even simple things like when he had the ball in the channel, he'd knock it past the defender, run in and force the defender to have to like slide and clear it out for a corner. Godin just hasn't got the pace to do that. So they would literally just sweep it up and play it back to the goalie. And we wouldn't get the corner from that. So I think that his physical presence was causing problems, a nuisance really. And like you say, that initial shot was good, good save. And he did well to react quickest, then poke it towards goal again. And obviously Hadji was there to make up for the goal that he was, like you say, he was robbed on there.
And you could see they obviously joked about it as they ran off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was nice to see.
Yeah.
Bit of fun between them. Because obviously they'll be selfish in the way that they want to score goals themselves, but they'll also be happy for teammates. And I suppose they'll be really happy for Sims getting himself back into the fold a little bit with this game and his performance in that second half, especially, and getting on the score sheet against Swansea.
Yeah, a goal and assist last couple of games, and then his contribution in the middle of the game was obviously, yeah, so much more, getting shots off, getting in the positions to get chances.
Well, he built space for Tats to head in for the third goal.
Yeah,
so, you know, those little things. I don't think people see that. They just see the goals and assists and the touches, you know, that kind of stuff.
He's a big guy, and not all strikers would occupy a defender like in the way that he does. You know, he's a big guy, big hair, you can see him. Do you know what I mean?
It's automatic. It's a mindset thing for the defence, isn't it? They know they're going to have to deal with this big fellow up front, and then it might take their eye off the ball for
the little, yes, the little player, you know.
Yeah.
And Tatsu is that absolute player where you just... Your defenders be like, where's he gone?
Where am I going? Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's there. And I mean, he was fantastic, wasn't he, in the second half?
Yeah. And in that third goal, like, for me, one of the goals of the season so far, like, it was just a brilliantly worked goal through the lines. I mean, Eccles, I've given him some pouters in the past, but a terrific performance in this game, I thought. That was a world-class pass through two defenders into Sheaf to really start the move off. And it ends with Bidwell on the floor, somehow wedging a nice little 56 degree to the back stick. Brilliant cross.
Oh,
I don't know how he did it. Like, it's just, well, and also his Haaland run makes me laugh. You see how he runs at Haaland?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a bad, I actually think it's a bad pass from Hadji.
It's slightly overhit, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's slightly overhit.
But somehow he gets to it.
But what I love of Bidwell is he does it a few times, like often when he's trying to clear something, but he puts himself on the floor like, well, earlier than you think he would needs to
but
be.
But somehow gets
and
it.
Somehow gets it. And then I've been wanting us to do sort of a bit more floated balls to the back post in those positions rather than like trying to, you know, smash it across. And then like you say, like we spoke about Sims occupying the space and then Tatsu's there. And I thought, yes, that is a goal that we would concede. Do you know what I mean? To like a decent side.
Yeah.
And I thought to see us doing that move. I mean, Hadji was picking up space even before that. He'd had a couple of sighters where he'd like ran in and Bidwell overlapping, and you thought, yeah, we're going to cause some issues here. But and then O'Hare as well, he was involved in a lot. He probably won't get the sort of praise from this game because of the other players. But those one twos, all the time he was giving Bidwell or Hadji an option to pack, like an easy option, unmarked, and that allowed us to keep the possession, and we didn't have to like force anything, and he just ticked everything over very nicely.
You're so key to have that type of player in that position when we play the formation we do, because it's the link. We spoke about this more often than not the early part of the season, is that we missed a link between each area of the pitch. When Sheaf wasn't there, we missed that link between the midfield and the defence. When O'Hare or Palmer's not there, we missed that link between the midfield and the forward line.
Well, that's why Hamer's absence was felt way more at the start, because obviously O'Hare wasn't fit either. And what Hamer obviously had been doing is he was doing basically both roles at the back of the last season. We had no cams. Everyone remembers they're all injured. So suddenly O'Hare coming back in, Sakamoto finding form. Suddenly you go, actually, Eccles and Sheaf can actually, in that game, that second half, they can do the simple things.
Control. Yeah.
And they both are capable of doing that. And yeah, it was brilliant from O'Hare. And then even Palmer came on, and again, his strength to just dribble and knock it past you, but his confidence is like,
you're seeing the strength of the squad there, Ross, aren't you? Because there's no drop off in performance when we're making changes. You know, it could have been four or five, really, in the end. And I think that's really key in what we want to achieve this year, is that when we bring other players into the fold, they need to be at the level of the first team. And they are showing that.
Yeah. You know, De Silva coming on, you know, in front of Bidwell, and you've got Latabodier coming on, and again, continuing that sort of control in midfield. And I think that's the other thing. You know, at the start of the season, you know, we all thought, oh yeah, he could play there, but it looked like Robins had no plans to play him in centre mid, so we felt very short. But suddenly now he clearly is happy to put him there. And again, he's just carrying it on, and you feel confident. That's the biggest thing. Like you say, there's no drop off. The people coming on, you go, actually, O'Hare coming off in the past would have made me go, oh no.
God, what like, we got to replace that with? Yeah, and then Palmer's now, there, you go, oh, okay, more than adequate to.
And again, he was making things happen. Godden, as we spoke about at the top, he came on and actually looked lively and actually was more involved in things because we were sustaining those attacks. He was getting involved. So yeah, all in all, the second half performance, I've listened to a few Middlesbrough things, and I mean the reason why they looked good in the first half is one, they played well, but also we were off it and we were poor. And the second half, yes, they'd say they tired, but once we turned it on, we looked levels above them in that second half. Which, considering we were both in the playoffs, we've both lost key players, I think it shows that we're ahead of them in our progression, and I think that's exciting.
100%. I suppose there's only one place the man of the match can go to for this game.
Yes,
the Sakamoto. Land of the Rising Sun.
Yes, Sakamoto. He was. I mean, he was unlucky not to get a hat trick. His passing, yeah, he's unlucky really. He's only got six goals now, two assists. He's unlucky to only be on two assists really, because you know the one against Swansea, if that had been Hadji's goal, that'd have been a Sakamoto assist against Middlesbrough. That he's picked those balls, he's getting the way to them, bang on now, pinging them over to the far post. And he's just
the
dribbling.
Confidence, isn't it? It's oozing through him.
And what I love with him, the biggest thing is like him and Milan. Their communication in terms of like, if Milan's got forward and you know the attack breaks down or something, Sakamoto's back in that right back slot. Like that link up. You've seen the pairs now. We spoke about it. You know, initially it was like 11 strangers, just everyone sticking almost to their positions because they didn't know, well, if I wander out, who's going to cover for me? Yeah. Whereas now you literally see it. Bidwell and Hadji have got that understanding. Yeah, because like you said earlier on, Hadji, his defensive work now, he knows where he needs to be going and he's doing it. And actually, because they all get on, you can see that everyone's fighting for each other now, which
you look at, look when goal. I love looking at the reverse cameras, right? When goals are scored, just look at the other players towards the back who are not involved in, you know, the goal. Have a look at their reaction to when we score. I mean, Bidwell, have a look at the goal, the first goal, and Bidwell is pumping the floor.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's not even in the mix. Like,
well, it's because he's best mates with Tatsu, mate. On certain scenes, he's always there. Like, he loves him.
It means so much to everybody. And now we're seeing, like...
And the bench. I love watching the bench on certain scenes. If you can see
that great vlog. There's a great vlog.
Yes,
you see
Middlesbrough, and he sits right behind.
Yeah.
But you, even in like the CBS, you see fads and that. They're stood up, like fans, as soon as it gets into like an attacking position. So it is... Everyone's united at you know... as one, really, which is, as I say, we've come a long way from everyone hating each other and wanting to, you know, kill each other at the start of the season, apparently. So, yeah, no, fantastic to see, and a brilliant, brilliant win.
Talking of United, Oxford on... It is Oxford United, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah, that's a great transition. FA Cup, third round on Saturday, early kickoff as well, which is peculiar, but there you go. Now... I'm hearing lots of different thoughts with regards to this. How do you approach this one? Because obviously it seems like a free hit really for both sides. It's not going to define each of a season. For us, obviously the championship is super important. Even for Oxford, they're in fifth in League One. I suppose the league is way more important for them as well. If you were Mark Robins, how would you approach this?
So I think last year we got burned, didn't we? And it was sort of a similar period of time where we obviously played Wrexham. He made a much changed side. Obviously, we didn't have the depth that we have now. And we know what happened. We lost. And then after that, we had like Norwich. We lost to them, lost to Burnley. And suddenly then we were in this little mode of, two defeats in a row.
We're on the back foot.
You know, and I think going into Leicester the following week, you know, we could lose that game. I believe we can win it. But if we go in knowing that we're in the next round of the FA Cup and possibly we've made a big tie,
a bit more of a buzz in there.
There's a buzz, but also less. Because if we lose to Oxford and then you lose to Leicester, you know, and had to say a repeat to that Norwich performance last year at home, you know, 4-2 or something, you then go into the next league game, which I'm not sure who it is.
Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, so then you go there, suddenly think, well, we have to win now because we've not won in a couple, including being dumped out by a lower league side. So I want to obviously, I love the FA Cup, so I want to get through. I think it'd be good to get a big draw. He's obviously going to make some changes, and
that's the beauty of having the squad, right? I mean, we've moaned about not having a squad. We've got one, so you've got to kind of use it.
But I was sort of before the Middlesbrough game, I was like, yeah, he will make
wholesale changes.
And it will be clearly the B/ sort of some youngsters. Do you know what I mean? But then listening to him, I actually think because also we've got this week, we've then got a full week. It's not like we've got a midweek game after. I actually think there's some players you probably could do with the minutes in the first team still to keep them. Because the last thing you'd want to do is go into the Leicester game and then we look like we've not played in 2 weeks and look a bit rusty. And Oxford are no mugs either. So I don't feel like we can afford to sort of, you know, think, oh yeah, we're going to get through just because, even with our second team. So there will be some players who don't play, but actually I think most players are probably fair game.
Yeah, I think you might see the likes of like Kelly, Fads come into the team, Wilson. Tavares, Wilson probably as well.
I think Palmer will start.
Latabodier, Godden, Sims likely. There might be a change in shape. They might play two up front just to sort of utilise the squad a bit more. And like you said, Oxford aren't no mugs. Okay, they're not littered with sort of star names at League One level, but they seem to have a superb sort of team ethic. Got a couple of players who are in really good form. Cameron Brannigan, very, very good League One player. Ruben Rodriguez as well is playing well. So it's sort of tough to gauge how they will fare against better opposition in Coventry, but they'll be bang up for it, and we have to be bang up for it as well, regardless of who plays.
Yeah. A lot of it will come down to the application and the Wrexham game last year. I remember the first half, the application just was non-existent, and it was some of the worst performances I've seen from certain individuals in Kelly, I remember that game, and Tavares, and it was just absolutely awful. And then suddenly second half, we turned it on, and literally probably if we'd been playing another 2 minutes, we'd have got the draw. But we've got to be on it. I don't think Hadji Wright will be risked. I'm not sure if there's anything, you've heard anything about that. Was that just
thigh,
shithousery?
That thigh issue, wasn't it? Because he had some ice on in the post match videos.
Yeah,
I think that's more precautionary. I haven't heard or seen anything.
We should have mentioned that. I did love
that
him
was great.
Sitting down with a Hadji Wright smile.
Even better was the Middlesbrough commentators just absolutely losing their shit over it as well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But I don't think he'll be risked.
Right-housery.
Yeah. I think Palmer will start. I honestly really wouldn't be surprised if O'Hare started. I really don't. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Just a bit of flair.
Just a bit of flair. I think Allen could start in midfield with, I don't know who, Latabodier or Air will play. Well, the more I think about it, mate, the more I'm thinking, well, we've not got another game before Leicester. Like, I know you don't want to get people injured, but if you did that, then you wouldn't play anybody.
You can't be apprehensive in regards to injuries, because if you start thinking about injuries, that's more than likely when they will happen.
It's weird, mate. The more I'm talking now, the more I sort of go, well, maybe, yeah, Latabodier could come in midfield, Binks and Fads.
I think you might see the sort of changes that were made for the Swansea game more than anything.
Yeah,
and maybe
a
couple of academy guys on the bench.
Yes, for like Hadji Wright, if he's not going to be risked. But I sort of think, like you say, winning breeds winning. You know, if Sakamoto was to play or O'Hare was to play and get a couple of goals, then suddenly he goes into the Leicester game on the back of a brace.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and buzzing to play at home. Yeah,
If you make all these changes, we then lose, then all the players who, first team players who then come back in, didn't play. I haven't got no confidence. We're all a bit like, oh God, we got dumped out again. And then you've got this big game where obviously all eyes are on. So, yeah, the more I think about it, the more I think, like you say, Swansea lineup is probably close to what it could be, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's get a prediction then. You're just sort of staring into the abyss there for the benefit of the tape.
We're going to go 2-1 to the Sky Blues.
Yeah, I think we'll concede. I think that League One, when we play against lower league opposition, I always feel like we seem to be on the back foot at a period of time, and the pressure towers, and it's up to us to, you know, take back control of the game. So I think we will concede.
Do you think Wilson will play?
I do, yeah. I do.
It's a big game for him. And like it was Simon Moore last year, because Simon Moore obviously was brought back in and he made another clanger. And it was that was sort of like him done at that point. Whereas, it'd be nice for Wilson to come in, look good, we get through. Because there may come a point where Collins' form drops or whatever and Wilson needs to come back in. He was number one all last year. So, yeah, I hope he plays well. And I feel like a win for any of the players who come in, would be big.
Right, let's end it with some look at the sort of the transfer rumours. I know we're just shy of an hour so far on this podcast, so we won't spend too long.
Is there any truth in the rumour about you, Dino, going to all things Sky Blue?
That I can categorically confirm that I will not be entertaining those talks. Ross, my agent has got a firm rebuttal on any transfer request for me, so that will not be happening.
Okay, how about the Sky Blues then?
So I've got four names here that I've just sort of I've had a look around, and obviously we spoke about Leandro Barrero last week. You put me on the spot. He is out of contract in the summer. From what I'm gathering, it's unlikely because there's a lot of big clubs looking at him, and he might be a little bit out of our league at the moment because of how well he is playing for Mainz. So I expect him to go elsewhere, likely to Sporting Lisbon or Fenerbahce. Mm-hmm. They're the two clubs I'm seeing with sort of the biggest link. So I think that's one that we can sort of put in the bin, shall we say. But we live in hope.
That lasted long, everybody.
Yeah. <Who knows? laughs> But that was one back from the summer. Yeah. So I wasn't thinking too much ahead.
But that's
that
exciting
one.
Though, that's type the sort of market we're looking at. Yeah. You know.
And I think another interesting one is sort of Daniel Pereira. He's a Venezuelan centre midfielder, Austin. He's been linked to Los Angeles, but looks like that move's been hijacked by an unknown team in the UK. Now, he fits the mould of the sort of the age and the attributes what we want to sort of replace Hamer with. And judging by the highlight reel I've seen on YouTube, he looks like the type of player. So very interesting to see how this one plays out. 2.5 million market value on him. So it sort of fits everything, really.
Yeah, yeah, no, it would. Yeah, I can't say no.
Have you seen his highlight reel?
I haven't, but that'll be what the first thing I do as soon as we stop this pod. Daniel Pereira. I feel like that name rings a bell. I feel like in the summer someone maybe like threw his name out or something. But
he's out of contract at the end of this year.
So that'd be a cheaper fee then.
December, because of how the MLS works with contracts. Obviously, they get contracted through a calendar year rather than the summer cycle that we do in Europe and most races around the world. So
that's been confirmed that some unnamed UK side.
Yes.
Interesting.
Have links, yeah. But the move to LA has been hijacked somewhere along the line.
Keep an eye on that then.
One that came out of a completely unknown source yesterday was Macaulay Longstaff. Now, I don't think there's much in this one. I mean, it's a pretty poor source. Most people have jumped on, obviously, putting two and two together. I think question marks over Longstaff, whether he could do it at this level. He's obviously scored a lot of goals at National League and scored a lot of goals and assists.
Yeah, 19 goals
this year.
Already. I mean, it's the only thing I'd say is that the first name that comes to my head is Mark McNulty at that sort of thing. But
he hasn't been linked, has he?
No, but obviously a lot of goals at League Two. Moise is another one who scored a lot of goals at League Two level, went to the Championship and didn't play. And obviously we got to see ourselves as not just a Championship side, but a top six Championship side. You know, a side that this season, but next year.
I don't think we'd be swimming in that type of water.
I don't think we'd be. I don't think we'd be. I don't think we'd be looking at him as
is it,
like.
It's not even swimming in that type. It's fishing in that type of water, isn't it? That's that. I mean, that's just bad for me. No?
Yeah, but there I. Yeah, I don't think. I mean, listen. If we did turn around and signed him, and it was like, again though, he'd cost a couple of million, and like you know, it's the one thing getting Tavares, you know, who cost you know probably 100 grand or something. Do you know what I mean? As like a to see if we can develop him, and if not, it's another thing signing someone for 2 million. Do you know what I mean? And gambling whether they can make the step up. I could see him going somewhere like Swansea if their manager goes, Notts County's manager goes to Swansea as has been reported. I mean, he's obviously a very good finisher. Clearly, he's got scores a hell of a lot of goals. Look, if we did sign him, then again, I would trust the recruitment process and trust Mark Robbins that could he be the Matty Godden sort of you know sort of replacement. But yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure there's much in it. No.
No, I agree.
One that seems to be happening is I think we've sort of missed the boat on this one. But Finn Azaz, did you see this yesterday?
Middlesbrough, isn't he?
Heading to Middlesbrough. His loan at Plymouth has been cut short from Aston Villa. 2.5 million looks a snip to me.
Yeah, it does.
And if we are to lose O'Hare, that's the sort of type of player you'd be looking to sort of replace the loss in that position. Mm. And he can also play any sort of those roles across that sort of, front three or midfield three or whatever, linking three or whatever you want to call it in those roles. So, yeah, I think we missed a boat on this one. But fair play to Middlesbrough to pull this one off.
Well, you immediately, the thing with him is you sort of feel like for $2-2.5 million or whatever, you know, on a 3-4 year contract, suddenly then, you know, if someone wanted to buy him from them, that, you know, already they'd, you know what I mean, they'd be looking at, you know, triple that value, you know what I mean, if he carries on how he has been for a sort of a struggling Plymouth side. But then, you know,
7 goals, 5 assists as well.
Have we missed the boat or is there some, you know, are we actually looking at someone else? Do you know what I mean?
I suppose it's the unknown, isn't it, really? It's when you see those type of deals happening and you feel like automatically you feel you're on the back foot, like you haven't like done the business there when you easily could have come in and offered him pretty much the same deal as what Middlesbrough are probably going to offer him.
But then there's got to be a reason that we haven't. You know, and we don't know.
So,
you
look at the O'Hare situation and go, is the contract there? We don't know.
And you look at Sakamoto, which I mean, none of us knew a damn thing about the guy. And like...
Flop of the season.
Flop of the season. Almost every goal, I'm going to be...
You've texted me every single time.
I have. But like, you look at him though, for like 1.2 million or whatever. I mean, already, if someone... Yeah, his stats, 6 goals, 2 assists. Yeah, he could easily get to like 10 goals and six assists.
Yeah.
You're looking at that and you'd go, well, already we'd be wanting £6-7 million for him.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And you go, there are clearly gems like that out there. And you wonder, like, I agree. When I saw that fee, I thought, wow, that does look like, you know, something we could do, but there's got to be a reason why we're not. And maybe there's other players out there that, like you say, maybe if O'Hare is going to sign a new deal, maybe actually we're using that money on a centre mid that we want to get. So, yeah.
And listen, there's loads of like stipulations in regards to players, like their attitude might be not what you want to mix in with the club, like all that sort of stuff plays into account, obviously. And we, as a sort of an outsider, we don't know all that sort of stuff. So, but as a footballer, like that's, for me, it's difficult not to see why we're not in the mix for someone like him. So, yeah, a little bit of a frustrating one from a footballing perspective, but obviously one that we definitely need to rectify with in regards to the O'Hare situation. Anyone else you want to talk about? Anything you've seen?
I haven't seen anything else. I guess, yeah, I mean, well, I guess that was that young...
What about outgoings?
Outgoings, yeah.
We haven't spoken about outgoings.
Well, I anticipate... Yeah, well, the other person we didn't even mention for the Oxford game, Ayari. I think it'd be interesting. It would say... If he's not playing on Saturday, then he's going to be going back, isn't he? I mean, we didn't even mention also that Kelly. I don't think Kelly's going to play. I don't think you come out from literally not, you know, starts the game from nowhere. Who else could anyone go out?
I think Tavares the loan might happen. It's difficult. I mean, we've mentioned obviously the squad. You feel like we've got a capable squad to challenge. If you add anyone else in, you kind of feel like someone else has got to go out. It feels like a one-for-one situation.
No, well, does it?
Well, I feel like it does, because then you have a player not included in the match day squad who...
But we need a squad, though, because we'd only take a couple of injuries.
Don't say that word.
No, but it would. Look, we've only got one left winger, and that's our record striker signing who's playing out there. So I feel like a left winger, and I feel like the centre mid, as we all know, I don't think that would change anything. I think that would add... Look, Yari's going to go, and he's on the bench, isn't he, at the moment? So
he'll be recalled. I've seen a lot of recalls from
Premier
League clubs.
He creates a space instantly on that bench then for a new signing to come on, or someone who's currently in the team to drop down, and we need the depth. You know, it's as simple as that. I mean, I saw an article today about five players. You know, one in Carl McFadden. Do you see him going anywhere?
Yeah, not this
window. He'll be released, won't he, at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think there will be a decent chunk overhaul in the summer. You probably see the likes of Kelly, Fads, Godden,
Simon Moore.
Tavares. Maybe those sort of five.
And then maybe someone like, I said, I know he signed a new deal again. I think he's 2025. But again, someone like...
Jamie Allen,
he springs to my mind. Just, you know, if we were to bring in, class centre mid now, and then you get to the summer and suddenly actually a newly promoted side, you know, were to offer a couple hundred grand or something. Do you know what I mean? He's one who I wouldn't be...
Surprised.
I'd be surprised maybe in January now.
Yeah.
But in the summer, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I do see a sort of a 6-7 overhaul player-wise in the summer again. Just to move us forward. Like, we did a good chunk of it last summer. I think we'll do it again next summer as well, just to add to the squad.
Yeah. And do you see any other player? Was that Brighton, that other Brighton player who... You know, there was that report that I think it's centre mid, that young lad who's been playing. He's playing in League One at the moment on loan.
I haven't seen that.
Maybe not. It's on Telegraph.
Yeah, we can definitely believe that then.
Yeah. There we go. We'll leave that one.
Yeah,
there.
We'll but definitely leave it with that thought. That right, let's end it there then. Thanks for your input, Ross. Thanks for joining me as well. Big thank you for everyone out there for listening and for all your support over the years. It's really, really appreciated. And as we head into 2024, there'll be some exciting things on the horizon, so keep an eye out for those. A big thank you to our sponsors, of course, at the Sky Blue Tavern. We'll be back next week, but until then, if you want to get involved in the conversation, just reach out to us on all our socials. Just search at Sky Blues Extra.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.